to the Puck Guys Podcast, the best place for top hockey news and insight with, of course, a little West Coast bias. Now here are your hosts, Patrick Mahoney and Jason Lamb.
Hey everybody, we're back. After 3 weeks, the Puck Guys are here. We got a new member joining the show. It's Jason and I and Eddie Jones. How's it going, Eddie? Thanks for joining us from the beautiful country of Canada. And the more impressive city that is Toronto, where all players want to move to and play for Mike Babcock. Eddie, how's it going? Thanks for joining us.
I'm in, like, Toronto light in the lesser city of St. Catharines. I'm probably closer to the U.S. than I am to Toronto right now. But, I can't complain. It's not too bad.
So Eddie's joining the show. It's pretty much going to be a three-man parade. We're all Ducks fans. Anybody who listens to us probably knows Eddie from Forever Mighty and formerly Ducks and Pucks, but he's pretty much on board with us, and we'll be doing both shows. And then we're going to have Jay hopping in on Forever Mighty now, so we're kind of combining forces when the opportunity presents itself.
But so we only do it in three-week increments, right?
Yeah, oh yeah, one podcast every month is probably a really good idea because apparently we don't have our shit together enough to do one every week.
That's how you build a fan base, is you leave them wanting more for months on end.
Inconsistency is the key to everything in life. And then when you're consistent, you're overly impressive and people like you. Everybody's been waiting to hear from us. Sorry, we suck. A lot of personal stuff going on in both mine and Jay's life. Honestly, Eddie's been like a kick in the ass for both he and I to get our stuff together and get this show back on the road. So the three of us combining forces now is going to be a good thing. Means more content, means more social media activity, which we've lagged on. So you guys could look forward to probably a very fulfilling off season and even more fulfilling regular season as we'll all three be combining for both shows. Ooh. And without further ado, let's talk about the Stanley Cup, because that's some news that nobody's talking about anymore. But we got to give props to the Grade 8, the second Grade 8, because, you know, Tamu is always in my heart. Alexander Ovechkin winning in the first ever Stanley Cup for the Capitals, ending the curse, winning the Conn Smythe, going on a two-week drunk bender with all of his teammates. What do you guys think? Eddie, I'll let you pop in first since you're new to the show. You haven't even said hi because I haven't shut my mouth. how do you feel about Ovi winning the cup and getting the Conn Smythe?
I loved him winning the cup. I don't know about the Conn Smythe necessarily. I feel like it's like a courtesy thing because it's Ovi and he's the captain. It's like when Crosby beat up Malkin for the Conn Smythe. So it's like, yeah, but nobody cares about that. He doesn't care about that. He's not sleeping with the Conn Smythe. He's sleeping with the Stanley Cup. So, I mean, it's great. You got guys like, what's his name, Damian Cox, getting all antsy and pissy about Ovechkin swimming in a fountain and just having a good time taking it around the city. So I'm happy for him. I think everybody really wanted him to win. And then him being able to go out and celebrate with the entire city, I think, is something we really haven't seen.
What about you, Jay? What's your feelings on this?
Yeah, I mean, you've always known Ovechkin as that exuberant celebrator of goals, and it's always been refreshing to see someone just be so in love with hockey and scoring goals, and then to win the Stanley Cup, to just end all the speculation or, you know, about, you know, never be among the greats because he never did. And he got it, and he did it, and now he is just having the time of his life. You wouldn't expect anything less from someone who you get so much joy out of scoring goals, let alone scoring hockey's ultimate prize.
Let's spend another maybe 30 seconds each on the Conn Smythe. Eddie disagrees with the fact that he shouldn't have got it. If you're probably thinking along the lines of maybe should have went to Cousy, and not Ovi. I would like to disagree and say that, you know, Ovi came through in the clutch. He drove the bus the majority of the year. He put up 49 goals this season on a year where everyone's been down on him. Everyone in that locker room has said that he's led this team, and I kind of got to give it to the captain there. I feel like he's earned it over the years, and that's not helping my case. I know.
No, regular season, sure. But, I mean, he was great, but I mean, like, isn't it most valuable player? So it's like Kuznetsov led the team in points. He was there every game. I mean, he was clutch pretty much every game. I mean, if we're going to go clutch, why don't you just give it to Devontae Smith-Pelly and say, because he had, you know, seven goals all season, had 7 goals in the playoffs that you know, he came through, or even Lars Eller for scoring the winning goal. I think it should go to the guy who consistently is the best throughout the entire playoffs, and Kuznetsov was their best guy. I mean, he had the most points on their team. Like I said, it's not a big surprise or, you know, a bad thing that Ovechkin won. I just think in the end, it probably should go to the guy who gets the most points on his team.
I mean, I feel everyone just really overlooked Brooks Orpik's contribution to that team and that run. So my vote would have gone that way. But I mean, if the NHL is going to play their game, I would say, you know, it's almost a kind of a popularity contest, it seems like, when, like, last year it was Crosby over Malkin, and you could easily make the case to Malkin. But I thought they were both very close. I thought that Ovechkin scored a lot of the goals. He, you know, every series he was a factor. So was Kuznetsov. I guess I can see giving it to Kuzi because he's really good at that eagle celebration thingy. So I might swing the pendulum that way. But I didn't feel it wasn't undeserved going to him. You know, him, even maybe even Braden Holtby, because with that one save in game 2, pretty much just changed the whole momentum for that series. And he didn't even start the playoffs the first 2 games, and then kind of just went on a tear. So, but I feel it's fine that Ovechkin got it. It could have got to either 3 of those guys, but yeah, Kuzi or Ovi would have been my guess.
2 more things on the Stanley Cup final, guys. We're talking, we have to bring up the Golden Knights. That's first and foremost, because they had a hell of a run, hell of a year. And a lot of people picked them to win the cup final, which is shocking. I didn't do that. I wasn't an idiot. I definitely picked the Caps in 6. I clearly knew the Caps were going to pull it off. I mean, I picked them in 6. I don't know what else you want me to say. But
of course you're right.
I mean, this team, I mean, they deserve all the accolades they got from the NHL award show, which we'll get to in a second. I got some beef a little bit with the awards because why wouldn't I? But Fleury, what an average cup final did he have? He kept him in it for the first 3 minutes. Go to the Stanley Cup final. He's overplaying pucks. He has his skates on the outside of the post. He's kind of out of position. He kind of just, I feel like he let down a little bit. He wasn't making the extraordinary saves. He wasn't that he wasn't good. He just wasn't hopey. He wasn't great. Yeah. I felt like he wasn't at that same level, and so that's why.
I don't know. He was almost the Jaguar, right? That's what we were going for. Is he was going to be the guy who wins the Conn Smythe even if they lose, as long as he continues to play well. But I think you give some credit to the Capitals for just outplaying the Golden Knights in general. I mean, there's only so much you can do as a goaltender. I think he did well. And it kind of just caught up to him. I mean, you're not going to continue to play as well as he did. He had like a 940 save percentage going into the Stanley Cup Finals. Like, you just, and that's insane enough. But like, yeah, you can't keep that up, especially if you lose. I mean, you lose in 6 games, you're going to have a couple of bad games here and there.
That's true. I mean, and he lost in 5. So, I mean, he didn't even get 2 wins out of it. He only won game 1.
Yeah, and one of the things that I noticed that was the defense in front of him. There were so many more cross ice passes, and for a goalie even as athletic as Fleury is to have to try and jump left to right, there's going to be openings. And then you're talking about, oh well, is Backstrom shooting, is Oshie shooting, is Ovechkin shooting, is Carlson shooting? Talk about a power play here. And eventually one of those guys are going to put it in, and especially if, you know, Fleury's jumping left to right, it just seemed like that whole team kind of hit a wall. They got tired. The defense really kind of got a little porous. They weren't really close to a lot of the players they needed to be, and you're hoping your goalie can bail you out, but that's unsustainable what he was doing for the first 3 rounds, and I feel like Vegas just kind of lost their legs a little bit.
It was Ovi's year. Moving on a little bit here, Barry Trotz, no longer with the Washington Capitals. Wins a Stanley Cup.
Peace.
And just, they didn't want to give him the money. He wanted a 5x5, 5 mil, 5 year. Apparently his agreed upon with the team increase was 300,000. He gave him the double bird and said peace. And now he's the coach of the New York Islanders, trying to reel in John Tavares. If somehow, if you were a young John Tavares and just highly skilled and you're worth probably $10, $11 million a year, you see two old guys start running the show. I don't know how that lifts your skirt to make you want to stay on the island when you have no goaltending. But Barry Trotz is now on the island. I think it's a good coaching move for them, but I don't know what Lou's going to do to be able to solve any problems with that team to help Trotz out. Trotz is going from a superpower with Washington with the offense, going to the island with John Tavares and a couple of guys. I mean, obviously Barzal's amazing. He had a hell of a rookie year, obviously. But when you look at the back end and then you look at the defense, there's some questions there. How do you guys feel, without getting too into much to the Tavares stuff, because we got that here in a few minutes, how do you feel like Barry Trotz, with his experience and his pedigree, would be able to turn this roster or team around, given what he's able to do as a coach? Do you think that's enough? I mean, obviously they got to retool a little bit, but do you think the injection of Trotz is really going to make a difference?
I mean, like he had a subpar regular season. I mean, he's always been considered to be like a regular season coach with Nashville, and then with the Washington Capitals, kind of like Bruce Boudreau. And then playoffs has always been it just hasn't worked out for him. And I think it ups his value a lot. People kind of forget those things when you win a Stanley Cup. And now he goes to the New York Islanders. And I mean, he's a great coach. I don't think he's one of the best coaches in the league. But winning a Stanley Cup and recency bias kind of puts him above, I think, a lot of other guys. I don't think it's going to help them too much. I mean, anything's better. Doug Waite, he did an okay job. But I think Barry Trotz is obviously an upgrade. But let's be honest, I don't think they're going to be that much better. I mean, yeah, you bring John Tavares back, you know, the Lou father comes in, and they have a good draft, but they got kind of lucky that some guys fell to them. It'll be interesting to see how they do. I thought they would be better last season, but goaltending was, they had the worst goaltending in the league. The defense wasn't that great. DeHaan and Hickey might not be back, and you know, they don't really have anybody else coming up on defense to fill the hole, and you still have Halak and Thomas Greiss coming back. So if you can't bring in a guy like Carter Hutton or trade for a goalie, or even Peter Mrazek, who's a UFA now, I don't really know how it's going to change. If I'm John Tavares, I don't know why you'd really want to go back unless you're just trying to be loyal to the team that drafted you.
Well, especially since Toronto's there and everyone wants to go to Toronto. Just ask anyone from Toronto about how great Toronto is. They'll tell you Toronto is great. So, there's some familiarity as far as Carter Hutton. I think he's a great goalie. I think he was a great backup to Pekka. So I know he's going to be available. He had the lowest goals against, best save percentage in the regular season. That he played 36 games. I think he started like 23 or 26 of them, something like that. So he is a good goalie, and that could really kind of hopefully help solidify that aspect of it. But, as far as the owner's going, he's doing everything he can. He's pulling all the stops. He's getting Hall of Fame GM, that's going to be Lou Lamoriello in there. All he's done is he's turned New Jersey into Stanley Cup winners. He's three, 4 years over in Toronto, and those guys look like they're up and ready for their next job. So now he's over in on the island, and I think doing that and then getting a player coach like Barry Trotz might be something else. It's just a whole nother change that Tavares is like, hey, we got a fresh start. We want you here. This is what we got. We got Eberle in here. We got Rookie of the Year. We have to add some pieces for sure, but if you're committed to us, we will make it work for you. So it seems like they're doing everything they can in the last 3 or 4 months to try and keep him on the island.
Well, let's hope John decides to go somewhere else and make our summer a little more interesting and fun to talk about, because, my God, we need something to happen. No, LA, no San Jose. I mean, just please. I don't want to hear from Sharks fans. They have nothing to cheer about, but anytime they get anything, they think it's the greatest thing since sliced bread. So let's hop off the Stanley Cup wagon, anything involved with the Capitals. Let's talk about the award show. First and foremost, shout out to the NHL for doing something right. As much as it pains me to say, celebrating the Broncos at the awards was awesome. Putting the sticks out for them during the awards was awesome. And my God, can the Dallas Stars fans not boo Gary Bettman when he's trying to speak about the humble Broncos? Can you let that go for like 5 minutes? Eddie was pissed about this, right? I mean, you can go ahead and carry it.
I get it. It's a thing. Yeah, I mean, yeah, you boo Gary Bettman, everybody wants it. I mean, we all kind of like it. It's funny when it's, like, in good taste and it's, like, during the Stanley Cup final or whatever when he's presenting an award or when he's just making a speech or during the draft when he has to announce a trade, sure. But you kind of got to know your timing. And like, it's not like they didn't know. There's a giant logo for the Humble Broncos behind him when he's about to start talking about it. And they all just go into the boo. And I mean, he shuts it down pretty quick. But I think he says, like, you can boo me later after I get through this. And they all start cheering. Like, yeah, we'll get him later. Like, it's not a big deal. We can get him in a little bit. But, yeah, I wasn't a fan of it. I mean, it was kind of classless a little bit by Dallas fans. And they really have no reason to boo Gary Bettman anyway. So, yeah, I mean, I get it. I understand it. But it was a little bit ridiculous.
Did you see it, Jay?
No, but I did hear about it. And, yeah, as far as doing that, like Eddie said, you know, pick and choose your times. But, I mean, if there's a prompt around that you know this is what he's about to talk about, then, yeah, shut up. Shut up, listen, you know, you can boo him until your throat is sore at some other point. But then again, it could have really been anybody else who could have came out and started kind of talking about it. I think maybe it's a little bit of a misstep trying to send Gary out there. Now, I don't know if that was the first sign you had of him, besides maybe him thanking Dallas or something. I don't know, because I didn't quite see it, so I wasn't quite sure. But did he, like, come out and that was, like, his first appearance and then they started booing? Or was it just he had already been out there before
And they were just booing him anyway, and then he came back out and they just continued. Then I don't like booze. That. Yeah. Nah, yeah. I mean, you could see it too. Like, even if it was his first time coming out, you can still see the logo behind him. So it's not like they didn't know. At least if they didn't know, they'd have some kind of excuse. But there's like a giant logo for the Humboldt Broncos, like, right behind him before he starts talking.
Like, how hard would it have been to have gotten anybody on the Dallas Stars? John Klingberg.
In it or something.
Jamie Benn, Tyler Seguin, just pay someone $10,000 to show up to the award show they're not going to win an award at to celebrate that. They would have gladly done it probably for free come out and be able to speak for him. Madonna would have done it.
Right?
Yeah. You would have got a roar of cheers from the crowd. All right, now we got to – I can't stop. I have to hop into it. The NHL is the biggest piece of shit when it comes to marketing. It'll work. They mess everything up. The magician here couldn't get Kopitar right. They bring Gary Bettman out to announce the Humboldt Broncos and celebrate them. They're the worst. They're the worst marketing team. They're as bad as the Ducks marketing team. The Ducks marketing team is terrible too. I don't know what it is with the NHL. They always wonder why we're always considered like the redheaded stepchild of sports. And it's because they can't get anything right. They have the chance to do something great all the time. They F up their own all-star game, and it ends up being amazing. And yet they still try to jump in front of the semi. They're like, no, let us die. Here, dude, let's just jump in front of it and make it all bad. Let's ruin it. Yeah. I don't understand what the NHL is trying to do. Like, do they not watch any other award show? Why are you bringing in a magician on to F things up? Like, the
Vegas.
Only thing.
Yeah.
And it was so bad. Why was Penn and Teller there? Why didn't you get, like, a real magician or, like, a real comedian to come on who's local to Vegas and make it make sense? The NHL is horrible, man, when it comes to marketing and all that stuff. The greatest sport in the world. And it's never going to be seen that way by the average fan. I had to fast forward through so much of the award show because it was horrible. I don't know if you guys seen it. I couldn't. I don't even think I watched the whole thing. I was like, this is terrible. Every year it's terrible. I'm disappointed. It's like watching a train wreck every single time I watch the award show. They screw something.
They should have had Daniel Negreanu come out and do something with the cards.
They're in Vegas.
Vegas guy,
yeah.
Right?
He's well, a Vegas.
Like, this is the NHL Awards. This isn't like the NFL or the NBA. Like, let's be honest, that's probably the best guy they could have got is that magician to come out to that. I mean, most of the time they have Gary Bettman or NHL players acting in these skits anyway, which is 10 times worse than just getting some guys to act in. I mean, like, Gary had like one line in this skit, and it wasn't even that hard, but he just made it so cringeworthy to have him even in there. I think I talked about this before. The last time I saw anything good at the draft, I think not at the draft, at the awards, was that skit with Getzlaf, Bobby Ryan, and Scott Niedermayer where they
and that was after
silver thing. Yeah, so I mean, I haven't seen, it's been like that for a while, and the magician thing just tops it off, and then he goes to shake Kopitar's hand, gets to die, and he's just like, yeah, you keep going, buddy, that's cool.
Awkward.
Dude, it was the worst.
Yeah, well, didn't they have a couple of good skits? Like, they had that one that was with Sam Jackson and Chelios. I don't know if that was the awards or not, but, yeah. Like, whereas Sam Jackson was, like, the hardest coach, Chris Chelios.
Oh, my God, that's, like, from the 90s, right? That was so
weird.
I think that was a little, or maybe it is, I've seen
early,
it
early
before,
2000s,
yeah,
it was a while back,
YouTube,
right?
Yeah.
But I mean, like, how cringeworthy was that attire? The commercial they did with, oh, my God, was it Duncan Keith and Patrick Kane? The Powerade one.
Yeah,
it was like third in the Stanley Cup.
Oh, so smooth. And what was it?
It was like, oh, yeah, that was smooth. Oh, smooth.
Real smooth.
Oh, my God. It was terrible. So bad. It's the worst. I haven't seen that, honestly.
What?
Well,
it's just like your commercial you said, right? So it's
but it was like
NBC, right? Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Man.
I get
dude,
like,
they didn't stop
yeah.
showing it on our feet. We couldn't get away from it. It was kind of funny, like maybe the first two times, and then it was like, okay, every commercial break was real smooth.
They just kept running the Connor McDavid NHL store commercial. I don't know if you guys have seen that one where it's like Buddy's buying, I forget what he's buying, he's like buying something for his kid. Connor McDavid comes in and says, thanks for bringing a new Oilers fan into the world. And he's like, yeah, I'll work on some more. And then Connor McDavid says, too personal, bud. And that's the commercial. They played that like 100 times.
Yeah. So bad.
Yeah, that's probably
so
the yeah. Bad. I think that's only Canadian, bit. Yeah.
Why is the NHL so bad at doing anything like remotely good? It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
So the positive things that came out of the award show was that Taylor Hall gets the Hart Trophy. Basically giving the middle finger to the Oilers. You traded me heads up for Adam Larson. And now look at me. I'm the MVP of the league. That was awesome for him. And then Victor, they got it right. Although Eddie disagrees. He thought McKinnon should have got it.
Taylor Hall should have worked the one-for-one into his speech. Like, that would have been iconic if he just somehow worked the words one-for-one into his speech.
I went one-for-one.
Yeah.
Victor Hedman getting the Norris, of course. Who won the Lady Bing? No one cares.
I do. William Karlsson won it.
Did he? They had to give the Vegas Golden Knights something. And they were like, well, William Karlsson's up for them. I was going to give it to him.
Well, they give him a lot of stuff.
I guess. Yeah. I mean, okay. Well, let me ask you guys that question. That's what I was wanting to get to. Is it kind of bogus to give GM of the year and coach of the year to the same team? Because it is kind of like ridiculous to me because it wasn't like George McPhee put together this rock star roster. It's more like he put together what he could, and we all undervalued them. But then Gerard Gallant comes in and puts the ingredients together and makes it work and gets all the way to the Stanley Cup final and is the most successful first-time franchise in any sports league in history. I got to say, if you're going to give the coach of the year to Gerard Gallant, I don't know you give it to George McPhee. I think there's other people that are available for that. I kind of thought it was dumb. Because it wasn't like this team was full of like great trades and all this stuff. Like he got guys that weren't even in people's top sixes and they contributed. I don't know. I felt like Gerard Gallant very deserving. George McPhee maybe in the conversation, but I felt like it could have gone somewhere else.
You don't like the McPhee so much. You don't have that McPhee-er?
No, I just feel like you know he put together the best roster he could, but I mean.
Good job. He did a great job, I think, negotiating with teams to take on not only salary, but also to keep all his draft picks open. I will
except for Thomas Tatar getting first, second, third.
Given what he did for Tatar. But other than that, I mean, he set them up for the future, keeps them at the low end of the salary cap, and went to the Stanley Cup Finals. And those are all players he basically drafted. I mean, he didn't really do much in the way of trades. And he could have lost his mind when he started losing goalies, left and right, and just tried to make a trigger trade and didn't. And he just held pat, and just almost every decision except Tatar proved to be a really smart decision and savvy.
I'll disagree with that. I'll say Gerard Gallant deserved the award, not McPhee.
No, I'd have to agree with Jason honestly because I think it's almost the other way around where George McPhee put together this team. I mean, he worked some deals in the expansion draft. I know some guys got handed to him, but he has a role in that too. Getting Shea Theodore from the Ducks. He gets I think it was Riley Smith was included as a trade piece in the Marchessault, drafting Marchessault instead of drafting somebody else. I mean, he was able to put together this roster. He put it together for Gerard Gallant. He gets all these guys in place. He makes some deals. Obviously, the Tatar one wasn't that great. And it's not like Gerard Gallant had an easy walk. I mean, there's a lot of credit for him. And I think in this case, you can give it to both guys because it's a new franchise and they both kind of had an equal effort. But I would argue for Coach of the Year that Bruce Cassidy had as good a chance to get there as well. I mean, Boston was decimated for a bit. I mean, yes, they had the best line of hockey, but there's got to be some coaching there. I think.
Rask had a great year too, right? Did he not play great?
Yeah, but so did Marc-Andre Fleury play great. William Karlsson scored 43 goals. Nobody expected that. I mean, you can't put that on coaching.
Okay, but he didn't know that either. It wasn't like he all of a sudden got this, you know.
No one knows exactly.
Yeah, no one knows exactly. That. But, I mean, who were the other nominees for GM of the year? I know who was for coaching. I don't even know who was for GM. But, I mean, I don't
not
even know.
Not Bob Murray.
Yeah, I mean.
Not Bob Murray.
Like, not it Bob was Bob. Anybody really even close? It was George Raffi, Kevin Cheveldayoff, and Steve Yzerman. Like, I would argue Kevin Cheveldayoff could have also gotten the award based off what he did just putting together that roster for the Winnipeg Jets and going out and getting Paul Stastny, which is one of the better deadline day acquisitions. I mean, that team down.
That's better. A guy who is going to get overpaid like a mother this offseason. It's Paul Stastny.
32.
Oh, yeah. Right when
he's going to get overpaid.
Yeah, John Tavares, when he goes off the market, that's the go-to guy for everybody else.
That's the next.
Or Ryan O'Reilly. Like, Buffalo's going to get a huge deal for Ryan O'Reilly, whoever gets him. I know he has a massive salary cap hit, but people want John Tavares, and every team that misses out on him is going to try and get somebody else in to fill that hole.
All right, so to wrap up the award show, we got P.K. Subban, who I actually really like on TV. I think that's his next career instantly. That guy's great on TV. Yep. He's definitely going to be on there. But he gets the cover of NHL 19, which we're all going to have to purchase because we're all going to have to play with people who listen to us. We'll be having to deal with that. So if you guys listen to the show, you can look forward to Jason dominating you in NHL 19 on Xbox.
Can I just play goalie in there? I'm not going to put together a team and pretend I'm good at
it. Oh, it's going to be awesome.
I haven't been good at ice hockey from Nintendo.
Let's hop away from the awards now. Let's move on briefly to the drama in Ottawa. I know it's a little down on our list here, but I want to get the older news out of the way. For those who don't know, I've been hiding under a rock the last 2 weeks. Mike Hoffman.
Stop saying hiding under a rock. I hate it when you say
that's
that.
That's my favorite thing.
I know. It's annoying.
In case you've been dead for 2 weeks and came back to life, is that better? Mike Hoffman traded to the Sharks, which is hilarious, and then traded from the Sharks to Florida because the whole idea from Ottawa is they didn't want to trade within their division, but the Sharks gave him the bird. And said, sorry, Mr. Dorian, we're going to go ahead and piss you off and put him back in your division. And not only that, we're going to get our higher draft pick back than what we gave you because you're a terrible GM. Ottawa is the worst organization in the NHL by far. And this all stems back because Hoffman is apparently a piece of trash teammate because he's letting his fiance say horrible things about Eric Carlson's wife, and their baby who was a stillborn on a burner Instagram account going after them with personal attacks, hoping their baby, you know, was dead, hoping somebody takes out Carlson Lakes to end his career. All that happens. Hoffman gets traded. I don't know, guys. How do you guys feel about if you're in a locker room? Obviously, none of us play professional anything other than maybe video games. But if you had to deal with somebody at work even, where there was like trash talk and then they go to somebody else and it all circles back. Like, would you trust that guy to hang out with you? And like, what kind of camaraderie does that bring into a locker room as an NHL player? You have to trust them with everything. It's your like group activities. What do you guys feel about this whole thing going on in Ottawa?
Freaking cancer, man. That's brutal. All the way around. Not necessarily, you know, that they don't get along, but the viciousness and, just the overall aesthetics of it is just god awful. And you know, he kind of came out and was trying to defend his fiance and saying we're 110% not us.
150%. He was so sure.
Oh, I was way off. So he added some percentage points since I looked last. That's brutal. You got to get rid of the guy, and they were kind of in a vulnerable spot where they knew they had to get rid of that guy if they even had a chance, which they don't. at re-signing Carlson. There's no way that's going to fly. And I'm sorry, Hoffman's not really the guy that's going to make or break your team like Carlson will. I just like what San Jose did. Besides, you know, they did this before too. Boston kind of did it, where LA got rid of Jones, sent him to Boston, and then immediately Boston and San Jose traded because the Kings didn't want Jones to go to a division rival. And then what's really great is the San Jose Sharks ended up putting up a a tribute video for
Hoffman.
Yeah. It was like 10 seconds long, and it's just him in an Ottawa jersey celebrating. He goes, "You will be missed."
Oh my God, that's so good.
How do you not trade him though beforehand? How do you not trade him at the deadline? Like, you knew this was going on, and then Dorian comes out and his excuse for trading him in the end was that he just couldn't have that in his locker room. But at the deadline, he was fine with it. They knew about it, and he said they got some good offers, but he liked the chemistry with Duchesne. I mean, how do you not do that at the deadline and get that done and just get it out of the locker room?
Yeah, I hate using the word culture, but that culture is just toxic right now. Yeah. There are so many things have to get moved out. Duchesne, I think, is unfortunately another one that's probably going to have to get moved out. Hoffman, Carlson doesn't want to be there, and he's your superstar. So at this point, it's just everyone's running away from Ottawa, and unfortunately, I think you got to do a clean sweep. But, man, you'd almost want to start from the ownership down and go that route. But it's not fun to be there. And they don't want their goalie anymore. Anderson's looking to move, they want to move him out. So I guess Tavares is going there.
Well, I mean, Randy Lee gets busted for inappropriately touching and making lewd comments to a hotel shuttle driver. He's the assistant GM in Ottawa.
Like, they don't even play in Ottawa either. Like, they play in Kanata. It's like an hour away from Ottawa. Nobody goes to their games because it's so far to get away. So, like, it's like not the ownership sucks. The team has all this drama going on, and yet nobody goes to the games. So they don't even play in downtown Ottawa. Like, it's the biggest shit show I've ever seen. Like, we were making fun of Edmonton for, what, the last five seasons. Literally, Ottawa's been sitting here just quietly being, like, just garbage for the last 5 years.
Yeah, it's got to be brutal for Hoffman too. Like, he had to either not know at all about her making all those comments, which I find really hard to believe, because like all the other like five or six other women who were like wives or girlfriends came out on Twitter and were like, yeah, it seems pretty reasonable that she was saying all that stuff. It sounds like her. Like, you don't think your buddies in the locker room are like, hey, bro, your girl needs to shut her mouth. Like, she's causing problems. Like, that's got to get around a little bit. But for him to be like, no, we're 150% sure it's not us.
Oh, no, I just checked. He's 170% sure.
Oh, it's going up. He's almost at 200.
Going up.
He's almost
at 200. Podcast.
So Ottawa's a tire fire. They make a bad trade. Doug Wilson looks amazing. He gets a bunch of picks out of it. And the Sharks made out like bandits there by creating some cap space too, right? Now they're looking to sign Tavares. So that's all good for San Jose.
They were going to try and sign. Who were they going for?
Who were the Sharks going for?
Yeah.
Kovalchuk.
Kovalchuk.
Were they after Kobe? Let's hop on the Kobe train. So, Kovalchuk.
I did a segue for you.
Kovalchuk hopping on back into the NHL after several years away, 35 years old. Unbelievable, he goes to the Kings. It was one of the things that happened on the draft. It was like the first day of the draft, right, is when that news came out. If I remember correctly, it was either on Friday or Thursday.
It was the second day of the draft.
Second day. So, not great for the Kings. I feel like it's a high-risk, high-reward scenario for them. I feel like he's going to put up 25 goals-ish, but 6.25 mil per?
Yeah,
because I think he's making 18. That's so much money for a guy you haven't seen skate in the best league in the world. I don't know what the Kings were thinking. I know they had to pick up scoring somewhere, but like, I don't know. What do you guys feel like? Do you guys feel like that was an overpayment, or do you think the Kings are right on the money and they're just taking a calculated risk?
I mean, we don't really know. I feel like he could come back in, and he, the last time we saw him, he was a sniper. I mean, but he was playing in a league where he could just sit in one spot, somebody would feed him a pass, and he relies on his accuracy just to find the top of the net. And the NHL is a lot different from when he left. And I don't know if he's going to be able to do that anymore. There's only certain players. I mean, Ovi does that, but at least Ovi has some speed to his game where, you know, there's a dynamism to his game where he can actually get things done on his own. I don't know if Kovalchuk has that. We just haven't seen enough of him. I haven't watched him play in the KHL. I've watched him in the Olympics, but you can't really compare that to the NHL. I agree. It's kind of high risk, high reward, because if he comes in and he works out, you get 25, 30 goals scored. You didn't have to trade any assets for him. You just brought him in. But I have doubts that he's going to come in and do well. I mean, his shooting percentage was slowly going down before he left the league. And it's been, 5 years since he's been in the NHL. Now he's just going to come back and people expect him to score 25, 30 goals. Look what happens to Corey Perry. I mean, they kind of play a similar role. They're not fast guys. They both have accurate shots. I just don't see how Kovalchuk's just going to come in and people expect 30 goals again from him.
Yeah, I feel kind of the same way. It's the NHL has changed so drastically since he was here to a much speedier game, younger game, that, you know, he could find a home on a power play where there's not so much of that speed necessarily. But at 35 and he signed through 38, I don't see him getting faster or keeping up with a younger, quicker NHL. So, I mean, it'll be interesting. Like we said, you don't really know until you see it, but someone to be that far removed from the NHL for so long, yeah, he's great in the KHL, but that's second league, and now you're in top league. And to try and jump back into that and try and remember what you used to know versus what is now currently happening, that gets a little bit more difficult. Goalies are quicker and better, and you know, you don't necessarily exactly score at the same click as you used to. Rules are a little bit different as far as all that stuff goes. So it's tough, and I don't think it's a good signing at $6.25 million for the next 3 years. And since he's 35, that stays on the books. You can't buy him out. You can't get any really cap relief from it. So a two would have been nice, 2 years. I would say even if he gets you 25 or 30 goals, I'd put him at $4 to $5 million, somewhere in there, but not six plus for 3 years. That's a lot to lock up on a guy you're not quite sure on yet.
But yeah, so yeah, they got to see what happens. I mean, they had good luck with Gabrick his first season. Yeah, obviously that they re-signed him after they won the cup, and that guy ended up becoming an injury-riddled mess, unfortunately for him.
Well, follow-up question real quick.
Yeah.
What if the Ducks signed him for that? Would you be happy?
$6 million is too much money. Yeah. That's just too much money.
I mean, you got paid that because of Patrick Marleau, though. I mean, it's literally identical to what the Leafs paid Marleau, and you know, Kovalchuk's agent just said, "Yeah, give us that." I mean, that's completely comparable. They're around the same age, same type of production, at least when Kovalchuk was in the league. So they really had no leverage. It's like, you don't give us this, somebody else will.
And they definitely would have. I feel like he would have got $5 or $6 million somewhere else.
Yeah,
San Jose.
So let's talk about the draft since we're on that topic before we get to the other blockbuster trade that happened, because there's some things that happen in there that are very interesting to me when you're talking about Dougie Hamilton. But Eddie, you're more of the draft expert as anybody who knows you and on a podcast or whatever. You've always been keen on prospects and who's been doing well. Can you give us who's your big winner for the draft? You can give a couple of teams and then give a couple of your big losers. Then we'll talk to Ducks.
Yeah, I mean, I've got a lot of pressure now. I'm labeled as a draft expert, so it's
well, I mean, you're not Cam Robinson and you're not Steve Corniano, so
yeah, let's so just I'll just that. Steal everything they said and pass it off as my own. No, for the winners, I mean, there was a couple clear. I think there was two clear ones that everybody's been talking about. It was the Detroit Red Wings, and I mean, they were almost benefactors of just guys falling to them. Like Philip Zadina fell to 6, and they got him, and they didn't expect to get him at number 6. And Joe Valeno fell all the way down to 30, which was a guy who was supposed to go in the top 15, and they didn't expect that either. And then they made some good picks with their next three. They got Jonathan Berggren, who people had as a first-round pick, Jared McIsaac. They got 3 picks later. And then they got a London Knights defenseman, Alec Regula. So they did really good with their top 5 picks. After that, I mean, again, after the 4th round, essentially, it just gets kind of murky. You really don't know who you're going to get. It's kind of a lottery pick to if you're going to get a guy who's going to be somewhat good after that. I mean, the Ducks have done well at that position before, getting guys like Josh Manson and Andre Kasha. But for all those types of guys, you're going to get guys you never hear again getting drafted at that spot. So I think Detroit is an easy winner. The big winners for me are the Islanders. But again, I mean, they were kind of benefactor of guys falling to them. You had Montreal drafting a center where people didn't really expect him to go, and Jasper Kotkaniemi. You had Arizona drafting a center and Barrett Hayden at 5. So that allowed guys like Oliver Wahlstrom and Noah Dobson to fall to the Islanders at 11 and 12, where they are probably top 10 talents. And then also Bode Wild falls to the Islanders in the second round, who was a guy who was projected to go in the first round. And then they made some good picks later on. So, I mean, those are the two winners for me. Chicago may be an outside one. They grabbed a couple of good guys after that. And then the rest of the teams are just kind of in this pack. And then you have the obvious losers of this draft. Nashville is a big one, but it's hard to judge them when you don't have a first, second, or third round pick. You can't really do much with the fourth, fifth, and sixth that they have, and they really didn't. But I would still classify them as a loser. And then the other ones I didn't like was Columbus. They drafted Liam Foudy, 18th overall. Made the biggest jump of any prospect in the rankings. He was a guy that I think at midseason was projected to go in the third round. Then he had a good second half because London traded everybody. And then he had a good combine, which in my opinion really means nothing. I mean, we saw Casey Mittelstadt did no push-ups 1 year. So I think Sam Bennett did the same thing, or pull-ups. And people were like, this guy's not going to amount to anything. We can't do a pull-up. And then Casey Mittelstadt was like the best World Juniors of anybody. And yeah, Sam Bennett struggled, but I'm pretty sure it's not because he couldn't do a pull-up. So I don't put much weight in it. Obviously, Columbus did. They drafted him 18th overall. A lot of good players that went after him, I think, are better than him. He probably should have been a second-round pick. They drafted him really early on. And then the rest of the picks they had, I think their third round and their fifth round after that, they didn't really do anything. So I would count them probably as one of the losers after that.
How do you think the Ducks did? I know you and I just did a show with Trevor Mighty, but how do you think that... That they filled out their roster with the available players? Like, do you feel like the Ducks made good picks?
I think so. People are kind of all over the place with this. A lot of people are saying the Ducks played it safe, which they generally do. I mean, they drafted Lindstrom in the first round, and I guess he's a safe pick. I mean, he's a guy who's played 91 SHL games already at 18. He's a guy who's probably going to be in the NHL next season or the season after that, so you're getting more of an NHL-ready prospect, and it kind of adds to the whole retool vibe instead of the rebuild. And then you get Bo Grew in the second round, who's a guy who's a little bit more of a jack-of-all-trades, just like Lindstrom. Two guys who are good at a lot of things, but they're not very good at one thing. So yeah, they played it safer, but I think they're good picks. I mean, you couldn't really swing for the fences in this position, and I think these are the best guys you could have got at that spot. Maybe getting Dominic Bach over Lindstrom in the first round would have been more of a home run swing, more of a risk kind of move, but they need centers, so I'm happy with that. And then the third round picks, I think, were the best picks they had all draft. Blake McLaughlin was a guy that when we talked to Steve Cornianos, he had him 25th in his rankings, and the Ducks got him at 79. And then Lucas Dostal was the number one ranked European goaltender, and the Ducks got him at 85. So I think they had a good draft. I mean, a lot of people have them ranked like a B+ and an A-. I think that's around. I think they're in that middle of the pack. You know, they're not top five in what they got in the draft, but with the positions they had, I think they took advantage and really added to their prospect pool.
Yeah, I thought they did pretty well. I think the only curious thing they did was draft two goaltenders, which I thought was kind of funny. Well, that remains to be seen. Maybe you got to fill the holes in the AHL too if those guys don't make it all the way up. I mean, not everyone's guaranteed to make the NHL, as we all know.
But Ryan Miller's only on for one more season after this anyway, so then you got to start kind of calling other people up. So it kind of makes sense they try and get a little bit heavier in the goalie.
Yeah, especially because I know that they like Ollie Eriksson-Ek. We watched him in training camp last summer, and we're like, ooh, we could kind of tell he needs some seasoning, but I mean, everyone does. Goaltenders kind of marinate a lot longer than any other position, right? You don't see any goaltenders go first unless you're Marc-Andre Fleury. And that's just not the game anymore. When Fleury was drafted first overall, his numbers were terrible in today's standards. And look what kind of goaltender he turned out to be. So it remains to be seen where these guys kind of fill out. But I feel like the news of the entire weekend was the trade between Calgary and Carolina. Dougie Hamilton goes from Calgary, along with Michael Ferland and Adam Fox, a prospect for Calgary, goes over to Carolina in exchange for Noah Hanifin and Elias Lindholm. And holy hell, that was a blockbuster that nobody saw coming. apparently Carolina was in the midst of trying to re-sign Lindholm. Those were not going well. He ends up getting traded over. I was shocked by this because Dougie Hamilton's a great player, and he's very underrated. And I didn't really notice how good he was until he came over from Boston to Calgary, about how great of a guy he was, and he's young. It's strange to me he was traded twice. First of all, before we go any deeper on that, how did you guys feel about the trade overall? Were you guys kind of blown away by it with the pieces move? Did you feel like it was super lopsided? How did you guys feel about it?
I just wanted to know what the Fox said.
The Fox?
That's all I care about.
That was such a dad joke.
I know. no, I mean, as far as me, surprise would be the first thing. I mean, the whole thing was they brought in Dougie Hamilton and was like, he's the defenseman. He's going to be our cornerstone kind of moving forward. Younger team. We got him from Boston, this is going to be good. And so I'm not quite sure what the falling out was, but, you know, they had an opportunity to get a couple of different players for him. So it's surprising all around, and just really haven't really digested exactly who's going to come out on top there for the most part. It's interesting. It's odd. I don't have much of a say one way or the other about it.
Yeah, I mean, Carolina gets probably the best player in that trade in Dougie Hamilton. I mean, he is underrated. I think at some point mid-season he was playing really well, and then he got moved up to the top power play, and there was rumblings that, you know, he could be in the discussion for the Vezina, and then Calgary just didn't play well for the rest of the year, and that kind of dissipated. But yeah, it's weird to see a guy so young and such a good defenseman. I mean, he's a top pairing defenseman, get traded twice, and you know, we kind of have some say on that, and we've kind of seen what the issue was regarding Dougie Hamilton and stuff in the locker room. But just looking at the trade, I think it's good for both teams. For Calgary, they're saying that now they can finally put TJ Brody and Giordano back together, and they're going to plug Noah Hanifin back in with Travis Hamonic, which kind of frees some things up for them. And for Carolina, they just couldn't get things going contract-wise with Elias Lindholm. Apparently the same thing was going with Noah Hanifin. They're both RFAs this year. And, you know, when you're put in that position, if you're not going to get a contract signed with them and it's going to go on all season, if you have the chance to acquire a guy like Dougie Hamilton, why not? And even on Calgary's side, they were having contract issues with Adam Fox. So everything just kind of worked together. A couple guys on each side wanting out, and both teams just found a way to make it work.
So getting into the reason why Dougie Hamilton was moved, I heard these same issues happened in Boston and in Calgary, where he wasn't the bro hockey guy. Like, people would go party. Boston, they went to Vegas to party as a team. Dougie Hamilton and Riley Smith didn't want to go. Next thing you know, Riley Smith and Dougie Hamilton are a longer part of that team. He's not that – I mean, there was – yeah, no, that was the whole thing. And they say the same thing happened in Calgary. The whole team would go do something, and Dougie Hamilton would rather be a bookworm or go to a museum or do whatever. He wasn't the buddy-buddy. He wasn't the party guy. And he honestly didn't fit the culture with the players. And that's been the kind of the rumblings that have been going around the league is, yeah, he just didn't fit with us. He was like the odd man out. So he gets moved, even though he's outstanding on the ice.
Yeah, that's kind of weird because, I mean, in a certain way, I kind of agree with the team and the teammates on that one. It's like, listen, if he's into museums and doing that, fine. There's other times you can go do all that crap. I mean, but hey, if we're in a city that you can go visit in the off season if you want. Right now, we're a team. We all want to go hang out, you know, build that camaraderie. That's kind of what you do when you're on the road anyways. You all go to dinner together. You try and hang out. I mean, not every time, but for the most part, you try and do that. And if you kind of just seclude yourself or isolate yourself from the rest of the team, then, you know, everyone kind of goes like, oh, all right, well, hey, he's good, but, you know, whatever, we can find someone that, you know, we can rally around or, you know, be more friendly with. So I can kind of see that side of it where it's like, yeah, we can probably find someone.
Yeah, I mean, but it, like, in my opinion, it's kind of a stupid reason to trade a guy, right? I mean, I get it, the whole locker room thing, but you know, I'm sure he was a guy that went out for dinner with the guys, and then it just kind of gets to the point where, you know, they're going out and having some beers and partying and maybe going out to the club, and that's just not his scene. I mean, I'm sure he's not the only one in the NHL. That's just not something that he wants to do. And I don't think he should necessarily be punished for not wanting to do that. I get it, it kind of harms the locker room a bit. But the other guy, it's kind of on the other teammates in the Calgary Flames organization. Yeah, to just be like, yeah, accept the guy for who he is and not make it more of an issue than it should be. If the guy wants to go to a museum instead of going to Moxie's or a bar with the guys, you know, it shouldn't be an issue. And then the team shouldn't have to trade him to fix that. But it's an issue. Like, this thing comes out, and if it was just the first time he'd been traded, we'd be like, yeah, okay, maybe it's overblown. But the fact that he was traded from Boston to Calgary and now from Calgary to Carolina for probably the same reason, there has to be something behind it, and maybe there's more. Maybe he doesn't want to do anything with the team, and maybe he's a guy, one of those types of guys who just complains that he never gets to hang out with the guys, and then they invite him out, and he's like, ah, I'm not going to go. So,
I'm busy.
Yeah, so, I mean, we don't really know, but it does seem like an insane reason to trade such a talented player out of your organization.
Well, there's nothing to do in Carolina, so I'm sure he'll be happy as a clam there.
Yeah, it'd be great there. So we got a couple minor things to chat about here. There was a trade that happened a little bit ago. Alex Galchenyuk, a guy who I thought would be a great fit in Anaheim, ends up going to Arizona for Max Domi. So you're trading a sniper for a playmaker. Domi is very well known around the league for his empty net goals. I think he has 13 career empty net goals. So I don't let his totals fool you. He was very good when he was playing with Anthony Duclair. There was a season two years ago. I remember they were lighting it up. They would always light up the Ducks.
Yep.
And Domi's kind of fallen off since that year. I mean,
Duclair.
Yeah, he gets a fresh start now. And, you know, at least he's not under the microscope in Montreal, right?
Yeah, right.
Being a Canadian kid. But Galchenyuk now gets out from under that, goes to Arizona. Maybe he's going to have a chance to flourish. How'd you guys feel about this trade?
I think Habs fans are hearing in their nightmare the trade is one for one. I mean, how many bad one for one trades has Bergevin made? I mean, the first one that comes to mind is Subban for Weber, and then Jonathan Drouin for Mikhail Sergachev, and now he does Alex Galchenyuk for Max Domi. You could argue he lost all three of those trades. Maybe the closest one is Drouin for Sergachev. And I mean, I would have loved Galchenyuk in Anaheim. I mean, looking at that type of deal now, they probably would have been able to make it work. Both players wanted out, and it just seemed to fit. But, yeah, I mean, he's lost so many of these deals. It's just, you know, Arizona gets better. They're already scary heading into the last bit of the stretch of the regular season. And, yeah, Galchenyuk's probably not going to play center for you, but you get the better player in that deal. Maybe in the long run, it evens out a little bit more, because I think Max Domi's a better player than he showed last year. But it's weird when you're the Habs and you're publicly saying you're looking for goal scoring, and then you trade a goal scorer for a guy who doesn't score goals.
But then he could be setting up Drouin, and hopefully Drouin starts potting something. Maybe. I don't know.
It could be, yeah. But, I mean, Drouin's more like Drouin and Domi are kind of those passers, and Drouin is a guy who hasn't panned out either. Max Domi's a guy who struggled, and people worry that he might be a bust. And then the ultimate trade is trading Subban for Weber. So, I mean, he's among the list of GMs. I don't know how they still have a job, because he continues to pull off these trades. And they're clearly, they just haven't worked out. But he continues to be given the responsibility to do them.
Yeah, no. Me and Pat totally agree with you there. We're lost on worth.
Yeah,
I guess, or, you know, where his value is, because apparently the owner sees it and no one else really does. I mean, other GMs love him.
Yeah, just steal from me. Please steal from me. Doors. Yeah, here's my credit card numbers. Doors are unlocked. Keys to my car are right here in my drawer.
Yeah.
Whatever you guys want to just leave a couple bucks. We're good.
What crap do I not want? You can have it.
Whatever I don't want, you can have. So a couple more things happened real briefly. Grubauer, he's on the move. He gets traded, and then he re-signs. He goes to the Avalanche, if I remember correctly.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then Brooks Orpik goes to waivers. He's going to be probably just sitting there, and then will eventually be bought out, I think, and then be available for a team to pick up, if I remember correctly from what I was reading. You guys can go ahead and take me to school on that if you know more about it than I do.
I don't know what you said.
I'm just saying. And then the other news that came down the pipeline was John Carlson, obviously much bigger news, gets an 8x8 contract from the all of a sudden money rich Washington Capitals. They didn't want to pay Barry Trotz, but they got a guy, got plenty of scratch for John Carlson, and deservedly so. He had what some have said an anomaly of a year, an insanely good year offensively. But in my opinion, you don't get to the Cup final and win without John Carlson. He made it happen for him at the back end. That defense wouldn't be the same without him. And you got to pay the guy. You got to pay him.
Conn Smythe.
There was a couple better players in the postseason.
Oh, fine.
But,
John
Carlson, maybe he got overpaid a tiny, tiny bit, I guess. But he's going to get the money where he was at home. And he didn't want to leave D.C., and they worked it out. I think it's well earned. I think the 8x8 was perfectly fine.
I would absolutely agree. I think they're going to need that cornerstone. It's kind of like what every team needs. They need that one great defenseman. You can kind of build other pieces around there, but almost every team that wins the Cup, they've got a good defenseman in their pocket. That's good. 8 years, $8 million. He wants to stay there. He wants the assistant coach Reardon,
I think it is. Yeah.
Reardon.
Todd Reardon.
He attributes him to really kind of upping his game because he was in charge of defense over the last 4 years under Barry Trotz and worked on the power play. And Carlson just thrived on the power play, thrived on defense, obviously. And now he's at a position where that guy's going to possibly be the next head coach for Washington. So he's in a good spot. Washington's in a good spot. Lock it up, their cornerstone defense.
Yeah, and I think when they moved Orpik, you kind of just knew that he was going to go back there. He obviously wanted to go back. Washington can offer him the eighth year that other teams can't offer him. You knew he was probably going to get around $8 million, and that was going to be an overpayment, but Oliver Ekman-Larsson just signed an 8.25. I think it was 8x8 that way. So you knew he was going to get a lot. He wanted to go back to Washington. Washington moves out the cap space, so it was written on the wall at that point that he was going to go back. But, yeah, I think it's a bit of an overpayment. But like Jason said, you need one of these guys to win. And if they really want a chance to repeat, you're not going to get them in for less than 8 years. Other teams are going to offer him 7, which is their max, and probably a little bit more than 8. So he takes a little bit of a hometown discount, gets the extra year, and gets another chance to win with the Capitals.
So, yeah, and if you lose that Carlson, then you have to wait for the other Carlson.
Yeah.
And you probably have to wait for that.
So the biggest free agent ticket that is yet to be signed is the one by John Tavares. He's being basically welcomed into the arms of every NHL team that has money available to him. He has not signed with the Islanders. I don't want to spend a lot of time on this because it's all a bunch of unknowns. We got Dallas, Toronto, the Islanders, San Jose, Tampa, Boston. Rumor Vegas is in the picture too. How do you guys see this shaking down? Does Tavares go back to the island? I think he does. I think this is all a dog and pony show. Look what I'm worth. All these people want to give me all this money. I could go here, go here, go here. Then Lou's going to be like, okay, what do you want? I'm just going to sign you for whatever you want. It's going to happen. We're all going to be disappointed.
Yeah, I think that's pretty accurate. I think he's entertaining the offers, but the Islanders have pulled every stop out to try and entice him. Even him going to meet these other teams, because I think he's going to be in L.A. in the next day or two, meeting with like 4 of the teams altogether. They literally come out and said, he's earned that right. He gets to do this. This is what it's someone just like, I got a trophy wife. I just got to keep her happy. Just got to let her flirt with the idea, but then really bring her back home with what I can offer you. And that's where he'll go. And so I feel that's probably where he'll end up. The only question mark for me is, does he maybe jump ship and go to Toronto, which is actually where he's from. But at the same time, Toronto's got a lot going for it with a bright future all the way around. And they got a goalie.
Yeah,
so that's probably a big thing.
I think, like, out of the all the teams listed there, I think there's only 3 that I believe he could really go to. I think he goes back to the island. I think that's just logical, and most guys want to stay loyal to the team that drafted them, and they sort of have a bright future in New York. They have Barzal. They've got some young guys coming up. They've got a couple goalies in their system. So, if he ends up signing probably, what, like an 11 by 8 or something ridiculous like that, he'll be there for a long time in the long haul. The only other 2 teams I could see is Toronto because he's from there, and they have a little bit of a younger core and probably a better chance to win now. And the last one, unfortunately, is probably San Jose. He slots right into first-line center there. They're a team that made it pretty far in the playoffs. They've got all the pieces in place. So I can see, he can stay in California. So that, I mean, he can go down to California. I don't see Dallas, Tampa, Boston, Vegas really being maybe that appealing for him, especially if he's going to sign a long-term deal. I think it comes down to some intangibles at that point, whether it be loyalty, going back home, or going to the team that probably gives you the best chance to win. I think that's really what it comes down to for him.
Yeah, but good old Canadian boys never stay with the best. They never stay with the team that's best for them to win.
Well,
they always go
free bagels for life if he stays in the island.
Yeah, so. I will personally deliver them to you for the rest of your or my life, says Donald Rosner, who owns his bagels.
Yeah,
unbelievable.
The bagel clause.
That's the tipping point right there.
You gotta factor that one in.
If John Tavares stays with the Islanders, I'll be so sad because, I mean, Shane Doan did the same thing. Oh, I'm going to stay with Arizona until the end. And then they totally screw him over in the end of his career. And it's like, can you just go somewhere and make it interesting? And it, well, be the Russian. Just leave.
Yeah.
I don't think the Islanders are all that bad. They're
terrible.
In the wrong direction.
I don't think they're terrible, honestly. You've got Matt Barzal who just won Rookie of the Year. You've got Josh Bailey who had a career season playing with John Tavares. You've still got Andrews Lee who's a 30 goal scorer.
Eberle.
40 goal potential. Yeah, Eberle they just brought over. The big question
who's on D?
They've got Ryan Pulock who's coming up. D is a question mark for them. They just drafted Noah Dobson. They just drafted Brody Wild. So you have to pitch them the long run. I mean, in about 3 to 4 years, we're going to be good. They've got two young goalies, one that they're just waiting to get over from Russia. So they have the pieces. It's just you got to sell them on the long haul. If you can sell them on that and that we're going to be good and competing in about 3 or 4 seasons, then they'll be a good team. But it's going to be tough because you've got teams like Toronto and San Jose. You can be like, yeah, we can win next season if you come and join us.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's move away from JT and let's go ahead and talk about a couple of things with the Anaheim Ducks. We already talked about the draft and how they did, but now there's some things with the team. The biggest one being big news in Anaheim. If you're a Ducks fan listening to us, and Eric Stevens leaves the Orange County Register, he's no longer affiliated with the Register. He goes to the Athletic. That's amazing. It gives you every reason now because now there's Ducks coverage on the Athletic, and they've been pumping out great articles. So kudos to Eric Stevens, Josh Cooper, and Lisa Dillman. I know they kind of cover the Kings too. Not Eric, but the other two. But they also been putting out Ducks articles as well. There's plenty of content on there. Eric's kicking ass so far since he went over to the Athletic and put out a great article with Bob Murray, which is what I want to dig into the meat of this conversation being that Bob Murray seemed very frustrated. He talks about change. He wants to make change. And in this article, it kind of felt like, I don't know how to make change happen because they gave everybody a ton of money and no move clauses. And I feel like he's looking at Corey Perry going, damn it, dude, you're letting me down. I mean, I paid you all this money and now I can't move you and my team's not going anywhere with scoring and I got to get this cash off the books.
You, Pat, just smiling ear to ear reading that.
Oh, I was. I was like, yeah, of course, you moron. You give everybody a ton of cash and then you give them no move clauses. And now Bob Murray's great. I mean, honestly, besides a couple of like questionable contracts, how do you not pay Corey Perry and Ryan Getz off those contracts? I mean, you just have to. They were the core of the team. They were the top players in the team. The questionable ones, Bieksa, Stoner, and honestly, as much as I like the guy, Ryan Kesler, tad overpaid, a little bit long in the contract. The Corey Perry one, though, I mean, as hard as we've been on them for that, what are you going to do? You got to pay the guy. You had to pay him.
Yeah, and it's tough to see where the NHL was going to go when he made those contracts about how it was going to go to a speedier, younger game. And that's kind of what happened with the salary cap. Literally, the salary cap made it so teams had to start using younger, quicker guys. And Corey Perry's never been a speedy guy. He's kind of had mitts for a while as far as, you know, dangling a little bit. But his bread and butter was the physical game in front and on top of goalies getting those goals. So it's hard to kind of fault him a little bit on that. I mean, you had to pay him at the time. But yeah, I mean, some of the other ones are questionable. Never seen the exit play for us, and then giving him an extension before that ever happened. So he's kind of put himself in a corner. I mean, he's learned from that mistake, but he's doing the best he can. But there's just not a lot of wiggle room. So, you know, say what you want, Ducks fans on social media, about how, oh, we should get this guy and that guy. It doesn't add up. You got to make small movements until something frees up.
It's nice to talk about change if you're Bob Murray, but, like, do something. Like, get it done. I mean, he's talked about change for so long. He talked about change at the deadline. Then he brought in Chris Kelly and Jason Chimera, and that was his change. And he argued that it was bringing some speed and some leadership in the lineup. It's like, how many years have you talked about change and then you don't do anything? Like, this is the off season to get it done. The window is closing. If it's not already closed, it's probably closed at the end of this season, especially if Ryan Kesler just can't play anymore. I mean, that's a real possibility for the team. It does sound like he's trying to trade Perry in that article and that he just can't get anything done. I mean, nobody wants to take on that contract. He probably doesn't want to retain as much salary as teams are going to ask him to retain. And the what you're going to get in return is not going to make your team better. You're going to be worse. You know, 50 points from Perry at that contract, you're going to get probably picks, some prospects back, or you're going to look at, like, what Ottawa got for Hoffman. It was Mikhail Bodker, another guy who's struggling at the same contract, trying to come back. So it's not going to be a pretty deal if they get it done.
Yeah, wasn't it? There was some sort of article, I don't know if it was Stevens, where he said it was the owner, Samueli, flat out told Bob Murray that you wasted my money. Did you guys read that?
No, I didn't.
I wish I knew exactly where I saw it. Probably on the internet, so it's definitely true. But he was accused of flat out just kind of wasting his money on some of those contracts. So he's in a tough spot, and you know, it's always weird how GMs seem to hold on to their jobs a little bit longer than coaches. It's so easy to get rid of a coach or a player, but when you get rid of a GM, you get rid of the GM, their vision, and now you have to get a new GM who's going to have a new vision, which usually means new front office staff, and it gets more involved. So they're holding on a little bit long to Bob Murray for what he's been able to produce, which hasn't been anything as far as championships.
So the Ducks also made a change on their bench. They fired assistant coach Steve Konowalczuk. So now there's an opening there. I think they have another assistant, Morrison, who should probably be stepping in there. But kind of interesting over the revolving door. Tredyani leaves, Konowalczuk leaves. Do we guys think that it might be Randy Carlisle's turn at the end of this next season if things don't go well?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, it has to be. I mean, they gave Eakins the extension. They brought up Wilford, who was Eakins' assistant in San Diego. They're, like, rolling out the red carpet for Eakins to replace Randy Carlisle at the end of the season, unless Carlisle goes in and wins the Stanley Cup. And even if he does, it's probably a similar situation to Barry Trotz. The Ducks are just not going to want to pay him if he... Like, I don't think the Ducks are going to win the Cup next year, but if they do, I don't think they're going to want to pay Carlisle what he would ask for winning the Cup, especially now what he'd be a two-time Stanley Cup champion, plus the recency bias. I don't see it happening. I think he's gone no matter what, honestly, next year. They win the Cup, they go far, they miss the playoffs, whatever. I think he's gone because it just looks so obvious that Eakins is the guy that they're going to go to. I mean, you give him an extension, you bring up the assistant coach, you fire the other guys who are already there, and Randy Carlisle's contract's up. It just seems like it's a no-brainer for them to make that switch.
I got a bold prediction. They bring back the Walrus.
Oh, Paul McLean as an assistant coach.
They get McLean back. They go, we're just kidding. We love you. Get back here, you big mustache-wearing dude.
So a bit of other news came out this week from the Ducks. They put out their 25th anniversary logo, which I kind of was like, whatever. Not a big deal.
I actually missed it.
I didn't think it was anything cool. I look it up. It's literally a 2 and a 5, and then when the 5 comes down, it's like shaped as a duck foot, with a little flipper on the end of it. So 25th anniversary. So then the other thing they decided to do was put out a video, which everyone thought was going to be... It's going to be... I thought it was a jersey reveal. I text you about it. Dude, they're going to show the second part of the video. Watched the first 3-minute video, and I was like, this is a piece of shit. But they're probably going to show a video at some point of the jersey. I'm in. So the next day they show the video and it's freaking Linda Cohn
and Guillermo
trying to
Charmelson. It was terrible. And then not only do they not show the jersey or give any hint of the jersey, they release the schedule as if anyone gives a shit. Who cares?
Just put it on Twitter. We
just
get it.
Put the link up.
Do what every, like all 30 other teams do. Like put a link to your website that you put the schedule out and that's it. But no, they got to put out a 4-minute video of them releasing the schedule after they put out a teaser. Literally, I think on the same day that teams like Arizona and Carolina said, just wait to the draft. We're going to release our third jerseys. And they had no hint that it was a schedule. And everybody knows that they're like, I think this is right around when Aesthetics put out that they're going to go back to the Mighty Ducks logo on like maybe black jerseys. And then they show this like them going into like the box for 1993. And everybody's like, oh, they're going to bring back the retro logo. And they're going to release the jerseys in this cool, interesting way. And then the Ducks figure out a way to just do what they normally do when they post videos or do anything marketing-wise, and they just make it corny as hell. And everybody's just pissed off. I mean, you look at the comments on that video. Everybody's like, this is what we waited for 2 days, and just watched like a 4-minute video for Guy Hubert to make bad jokes. And just, I mean, like, God. But that's what we should expect. Yeah, like, come on.
Eric Stevens even said, he's like, I'm still processing that video I watched, but the schedule's out.
Yeah. Thank God he's not part of the registry anymore. We're going to get the best of Eric Stevens now that he's the Athletic. I love it. Yeah. So that's all I got for the Ducks. That's all I've got for most of the show. Real quick before we hop off, the Hockey Hall of Fame class is going to be announced tomorrow, guys. Mm-hmm. Who do you guys think's going in? Eddie put some players on here. You got Marty Brodeur.
Yes.
St. Louis.
Yes.
Daniel Alfredson.
Yes,
no.
Mostly because of everybody else who's on there.
I really
feel like Willie O'Ree needs to be in the damn Hall of Fame already. That guy's done so much for the sport.
He goes in like the builders section or something, right?
Yeah, that's what I heard too.
But he should. He better get in. They use that guy at every opportunity. Every opportunity.
They have up to four players go in, and then they have two builders. And I think
the builders him and Haley Wickenheiser were the two builders, I think, that they have going in.
They're supposed to do that. So as far as possibly four players, obviously Brodeur. Pretty much every record a goalie has. St. Louis, for sure. Once again, this is his first attempt, I think, to get in.
Yeah. For his massive thighs.
His what?
Massive thighs. He's got tree trunks on his legs.
Like oak trees, as John Davidson called it.
Yeah, oak trees.
Alfredson, I would say as well, because his numbers are all there. I mean, he never won a cup, but his numbers were over 1,150-plus points in his career. And then even the outside of McGillney, because you would think McGillney, and he's been trying for years. I want to say he's like in like 10th year of something, or maybe even more than that, of eligibility. Do you think, I don't really remember him doing all that much. He has actually better numbers than Korea as far as goals scored. I think he scored 71 more goals than Korea. So if Korea gets in, he has 5 years of eligibility, and McGillney actually won a cup and also has better numbers, there's a chance he might sneak in as well.
Yeah, and those names they don't really jump off the page. I mean, Brodeur easily going to get in. You would assume Marty St. Louis does, and then the next after that, Alfredson, Cujo, McGillney, Roenick, and Osgood. I mean, any two of those guys could get in. I would give the edge to Alfredson, and then it's just a crapshoot for those last four guys. I mean, you could probably make an argument for all four of them. And we really know. I'd probably bank on McGillney as well, maybe Cujo, but I think McGillney is probably the fourth guy, unless they go off the board and pick somebody else.
Like Roenick, because of all the extra stuff he's doing for them.
Yeah.
NBC, I was going to say. Yeah. Alfredson, the closest Alfredson ever got to being in the Hall of Fame was shooting a puck at a Hall of Famer in a playoff game. I don't think he's – it's not the Hall of Good. It's the Hall of Greats, the Hall – for the Hall of Fame, and Alfredson's a good player. He's not that elite level. But yeah, definitely St. Louis because he's short and he made it into the league and made a name for himself being a short player. Marty Brodeur because he played behind Scott Stevens and Scott Niedermayer.
Yeah.
Yep, he played behind a great defense.
That's how you
and then it. Clearly, the number one lock is Roenick, though, for all his contributions to the league and NBC. And all his mishaps on air with, oh, my God, what's the moron's name we always trash? Mike Milbury. So yeah. I don't know why he's not on here, because he should definitely be going to the Hall of Fame.
Let's put it this way. Any of those guys could make it, because Rogie Vachon made it after 31 years of eligibility.
Jesus Christ. If you don't make it, you should never be allowed to go in. Like,
yeah, it's like you just got to 1 year where, like, nobody else was good enough. So they're like, yeah, we'll just give it to him.
Just throw him in.
Yeah.
Hey, Rogie, you want to join us boys up in Canada for a celebration? Oh, yeah, man, I got the summer off. All right, cool. Yeah, of course you do. You haven't played in 30 years, dipshit.
Let's get someone with the weirdest name possible.
Well, hey, guys, you guys got anything else? We call this one a wrap.
No, I guess some beers.
Yeah, that's pretty much it, I think.
All right, we want to thank everybody for tuning in and for putting up with any audio hiccups. We're all videoing and audioing in from three different locations. Eddie's halfway across North America, so we appreciate him joining us as well. Welcome to the team, Eddie, and we look forward to another show next week, or this weekend, if we can find enough content, right? And we have to wait till after July 1st to see how the first round of free agency goes. We'll play it by ear, but definitely a show within the next week or so. Thanks for tuning in. You can find us on gruelingtruth.net. That's where the show will be posted. We apologize, I haven't been there in 3 weeks, but we'll be back at gruelingtruth.net, and we thank Mike and everybody over there for posting our show. Find us on social media, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, The Puck Guys Podcast, and we'll talk to you guys later. Have a good night, guys.
Bye, guys.